This is Twit.
There was a new bit of news that came out regarding Visa. Visa was going to be acquiring a company called Plaid. And this was, I remember this news kind of popping up originally about Visa going after Plaid. And I remember Plaid very vaguely, but not a whole lot about it. And so I thought it would be good to talk to someone who not only covers acquisitions and startups and all that kind of stuff, but that can explain sort of what's going on here and what the reasons are behind Visa not acquiring Plaid. So who else but TechCrunch's own Alex Wilhelm to join us today on Tech News Weekly. Welcome back to the show, Alex.
Thank you for having me. An absolute pleasure. And I just want to say, having done a lot of podcasting myself, I fully respect how hard it is to do a witty intro every time. And sometimes you just end up bantering back and forth about keeping on, and it's perfect. And so I just want to send a big hug over the waves here, because it's being charismatic on demand, or on command, I should say, is not, it's not simple. It's difficult.
It is. Thank you for understanding.
We appreciate it. So yeah, let's break right into this. First and foremost, I think a lot of people know what Visa is, but can we talk about Plaid? What is Plaid, and why does it make sense for Visa to have wanted to acquire this company in the first place?
Yeah. So I think one thing we've all done a lot in the last couple of years is begun to use more fintech mobile applications. And, you know, if you go back 10 and 15 years, people were saying, you know, don't do your banking online. It might be dangerous, et cetera, et cetera. Now people expect to use Venmo on their phone. They expect to use maybe Chime on their desktop. And they just really have a lot of expectations to have access to their money in different places. And that's where Plaid comes in. Essentially, Plaid sits between you and I, kind of the end users and financial services that we want to use. It helps link our bank accounts to those services. And so it forms kind of like a bit of the plumbing in the broader fintech boom. And when you think about that, you can kind of start to see why Visa would want to own it. Think about it this way. Visa is a payment processor, a credit company. It is accepted around the world and has really done a great job, I think, owning to some degree the old way of doing commerce. Now there's a new wave coming up and people are using more virtual cards. They're using different types of cryptocurrencies. The world's getting more complex and more diverse. And so as the app world begins to support that, Plaid becomes more and more important. And so Visa wanted to make sure that they were going to be at the forefront of this next generation of financial technology. And so it tried to buy it. And that went medium well until it didn't.
Medium well. I don't know if that's how I like my burgers, but I guess I'm curious then, because to me this on the outside kind of makes sense. I get it. You know, you as a company can either try to sort of reach in and become part of this this new way of doing things and build this up yourself, or an easier way might be to acquire a company that already has their cables in the right pies, as it were. And so what was the reason that Visa and Plaid ended up not going forward? What was the problem here?
I think there were a couple of problems. One was the price didn't make a lot of sense 1 year down the road. So this deal was announced really almost a year ago today, you know, early mid January 2020. And at that point, $5.3 billion for what Plaid was seemed pretty good. You know, if you were a Plaid investor, it's a great exit. It's a big multiple on previous valuations. You're pretty happy. Then during 2020, COVID happens. People turn increasingly to fintech. There's a savings and investing boom with Robinhood blowing up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so what you end up with at the start of 2021 is probably, the general presumption is, a much larger Plaid that's worth a lot more money. And suddenly that old valuation from January 2020 looks a little bit stale. The other thing that happened was the Department of Justice sued to block it. I think that was in November. So we've seen antitrust in America, after years of dormancy, discover that it does actually have teeth. And so between the length of the required time to get the deal done, the price getting a little bit stale, and the DOJ stepping in, that was pretty much enough to put a nail in this coffin.
Yeah. So this is what's fascinating to me, because this did end up causing them to stop, kind of like what you talked about there. You know, there were teeth there that we did not necessarily expect. But it does make me wonder, because there have been, you know, a number of deals with scrutiny. What was it? Sprint and T-Mobile joining together, sure, as one example. And that went through. You know, Apple acquires companies all the time. Google acquires companies all the time.
Google and Fitbit today. Yeah.
Yeah. Google and Fitbit. Yeah. That's a perfect example, Jason. So what makes this, you know, do you feel, I guess, was it more about the concern there that the government had, or really was it more about the valuation and the staleness of that valuation?
I mean, it's a little bit hard to pull apart from this perspective, because we just weren't in the rooms. So I would say I agree those two reasons don't deserve equal weight. But your example about other bits of M&A that have gone through that were either uncontested or allowed to eventually happen, the examples sound good, but maybe they shouldn't have been allowed to happen. And so maybe what we're seeing here is a reversion to the correct line of thinking. This, of course, depends on your governing philosophy and how you think about capitalism and rules and so forth. But it's very possible that the Plaid block could be correct and the Sprint T-Mobile deal letting it happen was incorrect. That's, if you ask my personal view, that's what I think. What we're trying to avoid is so much concentration in different parts of the economy that single companies gain either monopoly power or something close to it. And giving Visa Plaid, given how important it has become, by my understanding, to the fintech world, might create a company that's a bit too strong. Now, for startup investors who want to sell their startups to large companies with lots of cash, that can be a little bit dispiriting in some cases. But I don't think in this case it was the wrong regulatory choice, again, from my own personal political standpoint.
So then, what is next for Plaid? I mean, you know, obviously you've got the investors who are really probably crossing their fingers waiting for that big payday, and that's not going to happen. Is Plaid more likely to look for another merger opportunity? Are they going to go public on their own? If you had to guess anyways, so looking at it now, what do you think?
So it's the latter. I think they're going to go public. The question is when and under what conditions. Back in 2020, when the Plaid deal was announced, it hit like a meteor strike. I mean, that's why Mike remembers it, because it was such a big transaction that people really stood up and kind of took notice. At the time, people were saying things quietly like, you know, Plaid's a really good business. It's not just selling out because it has to. It's selling out because it's great. That's why the dollar amount was so high at the time. So right. my hunch is that if Plaid was a good business at the start of 2020, it's probably an even better business now. A year of growth, a year of investment, a year of hiring. I spoke to the company and their CEO about how many people they'd hired, and it was a couple hundred during 2020, if I recall correctly. So how far away an IPO is or a direct listing, I don't know. But certainly Plaid has access to lots of capital from the private markets to fuel itself. It could even put together a secondary offering, allowing some employees to sell some of their shares if they'd like to, because a lot of employees probably had planned on buying a house after the Visa deal closed, for example. That's not going to happen, as you said, Jason. So I think there's a great path forward for the company. I just lack enough numbers about its performance to be prescriptive. And so I don't want to get ahead of myself. But at least what I've been told makes me think that it's going to be in pretty good shape to eventually go public itself.
So let's do a little, I know, you know, you hesitate to do too much crystal balling, but I am curious, if you had to look on down the line into the future, does Visa attempt to go after maybe another smaller company? Does it come back with more, like a bigger offer for trying to pick up this company? Or does Visa try to build out its own infrastructure like Plaid, but just does it itself? What does the future look like for Visa, you know, again, do you think? And right. Are we going to continue to see just these companies that already have their foot in the door, that already are doing the thing like Plaid, just they're the ones now. And, you know, Visa just has to play nice with Plaid.
Well, It's a couple of really good questions. So let me do my best. When it comes to Visa, keep in mind that Visa and MasterCard, if I recall correctly, are both investors in Plaid. So they've already made bets on this company's success. And that happened before Visa tried to buy it. So they were already hedging their future by buying a chunk of Plaid shares to ensure that they had exposure to that company's success, or at least maybe information about how it was doing. So one possibility is we could see Visa double down on that, put more money into Plaid in future rounds, maybe even lead the next round. That would not cause regulatory issues. It would still be a minority shareholder. So if Visa really wanted to put more capital into it, there's probably a way forward. And they have a lot of relationships now, which if they didn't go south, should be just fine to use in that situation. I don't see Visa trying to build out what Plaid does. I don't think it has the internal muscles for it. Startups are tough. It's very hard to do startups inside of big companies. And Zach, the CEO of Plaid, told me that they were expecting to have a lot of flexibility and latitude inside of Visa to make their own kind of product choices. So I don't see Visa going after them with anything other than a checkbook. And when it comes to playing nice, one thing that we've seen a lot of in the last 12 to 18 months, at least from where I'm sitting, and I'm just, you know, one person in the market, so certainly not saying that I'm omniscient, but a lot more API first fintech companies. And what that means is a lot more people in the fintech space are building products that are designed to plug into other services. And so I think that is the future that you're talking about, Micah. I'm not exactly sure if it's going to be Plaid versus everybody or more of a split pot, but I think we have kind of seen where the direction of this product line is going, fintech broadly, and Plaid certainly fits, I think, at the forefront of that.
So my last question for you is this. Because it seems less, again, like it was just the fact that the government stepped in here and, you know, about multiple reasons. But given that, you know, Visa ended up stepping back from this, Plaid ended up stepping back from this, it, in the beginning at least, had me going, okay, this is interesting. Is this new in terms of regulatory action? And are we going to see now more attention paid to these types of deals? Or is it... Can we tie this to some sort of trend, or do we just think that this one just happened to work? This one just happened to go through.
Yeah. I mean, forget a crystal ball. What we need is a Palantir, because what's coming up is a change in administration. And so we're sitting here right now in the very last couple of days of the Trump administration, looking at this all through the lens of the administration that's been in power for 4 years here in America. Once you flip the switch and you fill it full of Biden's people, and, you know, Kamala's people, I mean, it could be different. The posture could change. The attitude could change. Speaking freely, because, you know, I like this one, like you guys, I don't particularly see the Biden administration being overly antagonistic towards business. I think they're relatively moderate in that regard. So perhaps we could actually see a lessening of regulatory oversight for mergers. Maybe not. It's too soon to say. Ask me that again in 2 weeks. I think we'll have a much better idea of where we sit. But I think for investors, the idea that these cash-rich incumbents, these major tech companies that might be the acquirer of startups, did just lose some steam. I mean, this deal was a high watermark for fintech startups. And now, you know, it goes to show that some pathways might be closed in the future. That could impact startup valuations. It could impact startup investment rates, et cetera, et cetera. This just happened. So I don't have any data to show you a decline or an increase in this or that to kind of make the point. But that's the conversation, at least today in Silicon Valley.